Thank you for listening to this week's sermon podcast by Dr. John Hanna. It is our hope and prayer that you will be encouraged in your faith and in your walk with Jesus. For more information, please go to springfieldchurch.org. Here now is the most recent message.
Hey, take your New Testaments and turn with me to the Gospel of Mark, Mark chapter 14. Last week, we were only 1 week in Mark chapter 13. And last week, if you were not with us or if you need a refresher, the whole chapter had to do with the end of the age. It was Jesus' longest sermon in the Gospel of Mark, all having to do with the end of the age and Jesus coming back. And we really do believe Jesus is coming back. And he wants to come back. But the problem, I think, is that with so many people making predictions about when Jesus will come back, all these silly predictions, I think Jesus is having a hard time finding a date that's open for him to come back. I mean, he's probably looking at his calendar and saying, okay, November 17th. Nope, someone predicted the 17th. I can't do it then. So stop making predictions as to when Christ is coming back so that he can actually come back, okay? But Christ will return one day. And the Bible makes it very clear that we should not be consumed with us being caught up. Our concern is being prepared for when he returns. And so that is Mark chapter 13. If you missed last week, read the chapter and just be watching for his return. Mark chapter 14 is a very long chapter, so we're going to spend a couple weeks in this chapter. But things start to get real, and things start to get real intense. And so follow along carefully with me as I read, and we begin in Mark chapter 14, beginning at verse 1. This is a long passage, so follow along with me in a message I'm entitling this morning, The Tables. Now, the Passover and the festival of unleavened bread were only 2 days away, and the chief priests and the teachers of the law were scheming to arrest Jesus secretly and kill him. But not during the festival, they said, or the people may riot. While he was in Bethany, reclining at the table in the home of Simon the leper, a woman came with an alabaster jar of very expensive perfume, made of pure nard. She broke the jar and poured the perfume on his head. Some of those present were saying indignantly to one another, "Why this waste of perfume? It could have been sold for more than a year's wages and the money given to the poor." And they rebuked her harshly. "Leave her alone," said Jesus. "Why are you bothering her? She has done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you will always have with you, and you can help them anytime you want, but you will not always have me." She did what she could. She poured perfume on my body beforehand to prepare for my burial. Truly I tell you, wherever the gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her. Then Judas Iscariot, one of the 12, went to the chief priests to betray Jesus to them. They were delighted to hear this and promised to give him money. So he watched for an opportunity to hand him over. On the first day of the festival of unleavened bread, when it was customary to sacrifice the Passover lamb, Jesus' disciples asked him, "Where do you want us to go and make preparations for you to eat the Passover?" So he sent two of his disciples, telling them, "Go into the city, and a man carrying a jar of water will meet you. Follow him. Say to the owner of the house he enters, 'The teacher asks, where is my guest room where I may eat the Passover with my disciples?' He will show you a large room upstairs, furnished and ready. Make preparations for us there." The disciples left, went into the city, and found things just as Jesus had told them. So they prepared the Passover. When evening came, Jesus arrived with the 12. While they were reclining at the table eating, he said, "Truly, I tell you, one of you will betray me, one who is eating with me." They were saddened, and one by one they said to him, "Surely you don't mean me." "It is one of the 12," he replied, "one who dips bread into the bowl with me. The Son of Man will go just as it is written about him, but woe to that man who betrays the Son of Man. It would be better for him if he had not been born." While they were eating, Jesus took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and gave to his disciples, saying, "Take it, this is my body." Then he took a cup, and when he had given thanks, he gave it to them, and they all drank from it. "This is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many," he said to them. "Truly I tell you, I will not drink again from the fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new in the kingdom of God." When they had sung a hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives. "You will all fall away," Jesus told them, "for it is written, I will strike the shepherd and the sheep will be scattered. But after I have risen, I will go ahead of you into Galilee." Peter declared, "Even if all fall away, I will not." "Truly I tell you," Jesus answered, "today, yes, tonight, before the rooster crows twice, you yourself will disown me three times." But Peter insisted emphatically, "Even if I have to die with you, I will never disown you." And all the others said the same. Lord, as we read this episode very near to the end, to the death of Jesus, there's a lot going on. This is the reason for which Jesus came, to offer himself as a sacrifice for the sins of the world. Jesus is nearing the end of his race, but the end of his race is the beginning of ours, and it's the continuation of ours. And so as we seek to be faithful in these days that we're living in, as we seek to run this race with endurance, Lord, help us to get our lessons on how to live and how to run this race and just how to be your followers in this day of age by getting our example from none other than Jesus himself. And so, Lord, would your Spirit enlighten these words to us and help us as we seek to be faithful on this journey that we are on. And all God's people said, amen. Amen. As we run this race of faith, there are two tables that each of us will inevitably recline at. Tables are universal. Anywhere you travel around the world, you will sit at a table and recline and eat. There are cultures that take this much more seriously than we do. You go to some Asian cultures or African cultures or South American cultures, and they will host a huge spread and just welcome you, and you will feel the hospitality and the love. We in America have kind of gone away from that, and it would be nice for us to get back to that. But the table is universal. It's a sign of hospitality and fellowship. But there are two tables that each of us must inevitably sit at in our race, in our journey with Jesus. And the first table we see here is at the home of Simon the leper. Simon the leper, what a name. What a title to be known by. We know that Simon must have already been cured of leprosy because the Mosaic law would have never allowed him to host a meal in his home had he still had that dreaded disease of leprosy. And so we can presume that Jesus had already healed Simon the leper. We can also presume, even though the scriptures don't tell us, that he might have been the father of Mary and Martha. Their home was in Bethany. But Simon the leper, what a name. I mean, what a title to be known by. Even though Jesus had healed him, He was still known as Simon the leper. Why Mark would still call him Simon the leper, I don't know. Why couldn't have Mark said, this is Simon the man formerly the leper, you know? Or Simon now the healed man who no longer has leprosy. That would have been better. So even Mark himself could not let go of the fact that Simon was a leper. And I got to thinking about this, and perhaps there are some people in our lives that just simply cannot and will not let go of our past. However horrible our past may have been, however terrible the things we have done, there are still people that will not be able to let go of who we used to be. And maybe this is Mark's problem. In Mark's mind, and in the mind of others, Simon will always be the leper. It'd be kind of like saying Fred the philanderer, or George the gigolo, or Jane the junkie. Whatever your past may have been, it may be just so hard to let go that that's how people are always going to associate you. Even though you may have met Christ and he may have radically changed your life and the direction you were going, there are still going to be those who just hold on to your past. And you know what? That's okay. Just let your life now show that things are different. Let your life shine for Christ, because he's the one who's changed the course of your life for the better. You can think of me however you want, but the present demonstrates I'm a changed, healed, clean, transformed follower of Christ. I think that was the Apostle Paul's problem. Paul, before he became Paul, was Saul. And Saul was known as a really bad guy. I mean, anywhere he went, he would send terror and shockwaves, and people would run and flee because he was a bad guy. He persecuted believers. He was there at Stephen's stoning, and he reveled in the fact that he would go after believers and had them arrested or killed or persecuted or whatever. I think that's one of the reasons why Paul, when he was converted to Christ, may have worked as hard and as diligently as he did, because he wanted to convince people that he really was a changed man. He may have done everything he did that we read about in the New Testament. Yes, because Christ transformed his life, but also to prove, I am a changed person. You may still think of me as Saul, but I am now Paul. And so Simon the leper, he's probably like, kicking up his feet at home and saying, you know what? Call me a leper all you want. That's just not me anymore. I'm a healed, clean man, and guess what? I'm hanging out with Jesus, and he's in my home. So think of me whatever you want. So yes, you may be forgiven from your past. If others still want to hold on to that, just let your present prove them wrong. The first table that we must all recline at in our journey with Jesus is the table of consecration and ridicule. This woman shows up in Simon's home, and she brings with her an alabaster jar of very expensive perfume. This was not stuff from the Dollar Tree. And my apologies to any of you if you work at the Dollar Tree, okay? This was the good stuff. This is the stuff you get at Nordstrom's, okay? This was expensive perfume. So much so, it was worth a year's wages. This was the good stuff. And what does she do with this very expensive good stuff? She begins to anoint Jesus. She consecrates not only Jesus, but she consecrates this very expensive perfume. And she consecrates herself to him. What does consecrate mean? She gives her all to Jesus in a very beautiful public display of what Jesus means to her. She gave her best. We too will find ourselves sitting at some point at the table of consecration and ridicule. In other words, as we are journeying with Jesus, as we're running this race, there's going to come a time where you're going to have to take a hard look and make a difficult assessment of your life and everything about you, and you're going to have to say, can I give my everything to Jesus? Am I going to stop holding back? And am I going to give him my everything? And the question we are each going to have to ask Is Jesus worth it? Is he worth it? Is he worth me giving him my everything? The other question we need to ask is, am I going to stop holding back? Because all of us hold back. But this lady did not. Just like the widow that we read about in Mark chapter 12, remember when she gave her 2 coins, everything she had, she said, is my Lord worth it? And am I going to hold back? And she did not. Reminds me of the episode of Cain and Abel. Turn to Genesis chapter 4, just a couple verses in Genesis chapter 4. The two brothers, Cain and Abel, Genesis chapter 4, and I want to begin reading at verse 2. Later, Eve gave birth to his brother Cain. Now Abel kept flocks. His brother Cain worked the soil. So Abel was the farmer. Cain was the gardener. In the course of time, when they went to go present their offerings to God, Cain brought some of the fruits of the soil as an offering to the Lord. Now, it doesn't explicitly say here, but we can kind of read in between the lines. When Cain went to go give his offerings to God, it was a half-hearted kind of thing. It wasn't the best of his crop. It was probably defective in some way, maybe moldy. He certainly didn't put a lot of thought into it. He didn't put his all into it, and he certainly didn't give his best to God. It was a half-hearted, ho-hum offering. But Abel also brought an offering to God. And get this, they were the fat portions from some of the firstborn of his flock. It was the best of the best that he had to offer God. And what was the result? The Lord looked with favor on Abel and his offering, but on Cain and his offering, he did not look with favor. And if you read the rest of the story, Cain got upset, took it out on his brother, and it was not good. You see the difference between Cain's offering and Abel's offering? Abel gave his very best. I really struggled all week to share this illustration with you, and I'm still kind of struggling. I don't even know if I should, but I'm going to anyway. And I hesitate because there were some good people back then. But when Renee and I came to the church 23 and a half years ago, one of the things the church did for us was give us a food pounding. And so we went into our home where we were staying at the time, and we looked in the kitchen and the pantry, and there was all kinds of food, you know. And it was very thoughtful and very wonderful gesture from the church at the time. But as Renee started going through the food, she saw that a lot of it, probably, would you say half? Maybe half was expired. Now, me, I'll eat anything, okay? I mean, I'll drink milk that's 4 weeks expired, okay? So for me, it wasn't a big deal, okay? But we had a 9-month-old at the time, and, you know, Renee's kind of health conscious about that kind of sort of thing. And as we kept going through the food, I think we had to throw away at least half of what was given to us. And again, don't get me wrong, there were some good people back then. But my point is this, if we're going to offer to the Lord, are we going to give the very best of what we have? Or are we just going to be lackluster and give him the leftovers? Or give him the stuff that we're going to throw out anyway? Another way of looking at this passage, Jesus said, whatever you do unto the least of these, you do unto me. Obviously, we can't present Jesus himself personally gifts. I mean, if Jesus physically were here in the person, boy, each of us would be dressed up as much as we can, and we'd present him the very best of what we could. But in lieu of that, when we go to serve others, when we see the face of another, do we see the face of Jesus in them? And if we see the face of Jesus in the other, do we give the other the very best of what we can to them? For whatever you do to the least of these, you do unto me, Jesus says. If we see Jesus in the other, are we giving them our best? In service to others, are we consecrating our all to them? Because that's what Jesus does for us. You know, when we do that, we will face ridicule. Look again at what the people said to this woman when she gave her very best to Jesus. They ridiculed her. They rebuked her. Those present, verse 4, were saying indignantly to one another, "Why waste this perfume? It could have been sold for more than a year's wages." And the money given to the poor, they rebuked her harshly. They ridiculed her. That's what's going to happen if we offer our very lives and our gifts and our service as a consecration to Christ and to others. People will mock us. They will ridicule us. They will say things to us that may hurt. I want to share this quote by Mother Teresa. I've shared it with you before, and I'm going to share it with you again because it is an incredible quote. "People are often unreasonable, illogical, and self-centered. Forgive them anyway. If you are kind, people may accuse you of selfish, ulterior motives. Be kind anyway. If you are successful, you will win some false friends and some true enemies. Succeed anyway. If you are honest and frank, people may cheat you. Be honest and frank anyway. What you spend years building, someone could destroy overnight. Build anyway. If you find serenity and happiness, there may be jealousy. Be happy anyway. The good you do today, people will often forget tomorrow. Do good anyway. Give the world the best you have, and it may never be enough. Give the world the best you've got anyway. You see, in the final analysis, it is between you and God. It was never between you and them anyway." The first table we all must recline at in this journey with Jesus is the table of consecration and ridicule. But it's a table we must sit at and give our all to. The second table that we will all recline at in this journey of faith as we run this race of faith with Jesus is the table of sacrifice and betrayal. Look at Mark 14, verse 17. "When evening came, Jesus arrived with the 12. While they were reclining at the table eating, he said, 'Truly I tell you, one of you will betray me, one who is eating with me.'" Are we willing to sacrifice our all, even as Jesus was getting ready to sacrifice his all? Are we willing to sacrifice our all for the sake of the gospel? And again, we need to ask the same question that we asked sitting at the first table. Is Jesus worth it? Is he worth it? Because if Jesus is worth it, we have no other choice, no other option but to say, I must be willing to sacrifice my all. Easier said than done. But if we're going to faithfully run this race of faith, we must be willing to give our all. There's an obscure poem that I'm pretty sure no one in this room has ever sung before. It's a hymn, but I want to share it with you. It's called "Life, Life of Love Poured Out," written by a man named Frank Olaben. This is how the hymn goes. Let it speak to your heart as we talk about sacrificing our all, even as Jesus gave his all. "Life, love's life is poured out and is fragrant and holy. Life is amid rude earthly thorns, yet is stainless and sweet. From life God's glorious but lowly face of love shines forth and causes us to bow low at your feet, Lord. Grief, love's grief took every arrow from hate. Only your suffering heart could meet the grief. From grief your face, which is shining in sorrow, draws us in adoration low at your feet, Lord. Death, death of stricken love is exploring wrath's sea. Death, O life's mysterious death, deep meeting deep. From death, your bursting heart fills ours, which in turn pours out everything in worship low at your feet, Lord." With the act of our commitment to sacrifice for Jesus will come betrayal. I wish I knew this when I was a young person, that betrayal will be inevitable. Jesus here in our passage knew who his betrayer was, and he knew it was coming. We may or may not know. That's just how life happens. If I were to take a poll and ask you to raise your hand, if you've never been betrayed by a friend, my hunch would be there wouldn't be a hand that goes up. Betrayal, by its very definition, means someone close to you. If it wasn't someone close to you, it wouldn't be betrayal. You couldn't get any closer than one of Jesus' disciples. The cost of sacrifice is betrayal. Even now, you're probably thinking of that one who betrayed you, that one who was close to you. And it took you by surprise. You didn't see it coming. It was someone you trusted. You may be familiar with the name William Tyndale, one of the Protestant reformers. His calling was to translate the Bible so that the Bible could be read and accessible to the masses. The Roman Catholic Church at the time didn't really appreciate that. And he had a friend named Henry Phillips who betrayed him. Phillips was a wealthy man, but had lost his inheritance due to foolish living. And the Roman Catholic Church decided to pay him a large sum to turn over his friend William Tyndale, which he did. And 489 years ago tomorrow, to the day, October 6th, 1536, William Tyndale was burned alive at the stake because he was betrayed by his friend. All of us must sit at the table of sacrifice and betrayal if we're going to take following Jesus seriously. It's not easy, but Jesus said, if anyone would come after me and be my disciple, they must take up their cross and follow me. I don't know which table you're at right now, but wherever you're at, wherever you are in your journey, what we need to say and be reminded of day in and day out is, Lord, not my will, but your will be done.
Hi, I'm John Hanna, pastor of All Things Good, a church that believes in the goodness of God because God is the source of all things good. We are located on the corner of 18th and E Street in Springfield, and our Sunday morning service is 11 o'clock a.m. For more information about our church, you can visit our website at springfieldchurch.org. We look forward to meeting you, and I hope you have a great day.